Hello, and a really warm welcome to the 11th edition of Alchemy Film and Moving Image Festival. My name is Alex Wathney, and I am part of the curation team here at Alchemy. You are listening to Sit Down, our ongoing artist interviews project. In this conversation, Alchemy programmer Marius Hurdy speaks with artist Jason Moyes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 11th Alchemy Film and Moving Image Festival. I'm Marius Hurdy, and I'm part of the curation team here at Alchemy. We have filmmaker Jason Moyes with us today, a local artist whose work we are celebrating at this year's festival in a retrospective program called Attention Red. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, nice to see you today.
Jason Moyes is a founding member of Moving Image Makers Collective, an active and independent group of artists based in the Scottish Borders that emerged from a program of community filmmaking workshops that Alchemy delivered in 2014. Jason Moyes' film and video work fixates on various environmental and infrastructural features and maps them often to ideas of rurality, Scottishness, and the color red. Living in Denholm, 5 miles outside Hoek in the Scottish Borders, Moyes returns repeatedly to themes like the architectures of energy, masts, pylons, and radios, and how these define our engagement with nature and outdoor space, as well as the human intervention on it. Made between 2014 and 2021, the films in this program presented here interrogate such themes through documentary, home movies, and found footage, in addition to stop motion animation and computer-generated manipulations of the image. Now, Jason, that I have been talking about fixations, I would like to start off with a little selection of a few that I find recur often in your films. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we named the program Attention Red for a reason. So red features literally sometimes in titles of your films, like Red Lights and the Solstice Moon, in Red Cap, and then also in the image itself, like in blinking objects, like an antenna, like in Red Lights, or you dyeing the image in red, like in film The Forest Four, or From Scotland with Love, for example. Mm-hmm. And also, what we were talking earlier, in one of the songs of your band, Vacuum Spasm Babies, Red Dots. So could you tell us a little bit about red as a fixation in your work?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. So the place that I'm based in Denham, near Hoek, that you mentioned, if I look out of one window, I see the television mast that was featured in Red Lights and a Solstice Moon. And of course, at night, when I walk out to the front step, I see the red of those lights. If I look out another window, I look out into the forest that I've spent a lot of time in and where I've made, four films now, with Film The Forest number four being the latest. So there's, red is evident in the forest, red is evident in those red lights. And it's also a really emotive colour. So when you think of red, you think of anger and violence and danger and fire. But you also think of sort of passion and love. And then in terms of works like Energy Sent Along Wires, we think of the colour of blood and the way that energy flows through our veins. So it's an emotive color, and it's not one that I always plan to use and work. I think instinctively I go for that color. If I was an artist using paint, there would be tubes of red paint on mass order just to keep the supply going. But it's just a color that I enjoy exploring and thinking about how that makes me feel as an artist to use that color, and how an audience member is going to relate to that color when they see it.
So would you say then red is kind of expressing that energy of your work?
Yeah, I think so. So if you look at Film The Forest number four, red's in there. At certain times of year, the forest will be full of the color red, but other times it won't. So, that idea of applying that red energy, And in particular, in that film, it's a colour of devotion to the forest as well. So it's a very energetic colour, and again, a colour that I see surrounding me. And of course, as an artist, you're always informed and influenced by the things that you see in your daily life.
Yeah, and I've also read in Red Cap, for example, where red is basically the blood that the Red Cap of folktale of that murderous dwarf basically who needs to kill travelers to get the blood of them to always keep his cap red. So it also has something, yeah, a little like an energy, but also a destructive energy in it.
Yeah, I think so. And Red Cap is, you know, it's a really early film for me. But it's, again, it's actually made at a castle, a small castle that I can see from where I live up on the hill. And there's a really nice connection to alchemy as well. The castle that we shot at is called Fatlip's Castle. And it was the scene of a film walk, maybe 2 years ago, where we walked up to the castle and we projected the Stan Brakhage film Text of Light. So it was really nice to have had that film made and shown at Alchemy, and then to have a visit with other filmmakers and artists from across the globe walk up to that castle. It was a really special day, and I felt a strong connection to that location still.
Yeah. Because you were saying you're inspired, of course, by your surroundings, and you were talking about the electricity pole outside. It's that brings me to my next kind of, I would call it fixation, that pops up frequently, that is electricity. It also goes alongside kind of energy. It's like we see it in energy sent along wires, in red lights also. We see pylons, masts, and also frequent kind of radios. So could you talk about electricity as an inspiration in your work and also as a feature?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I've been asking myself the same question about the obsession with pylons in particular. At the moment, I'm doing research for a new work that will focus quite heavily on pylons and based loosely on a quote from a J.G. Ballard short story. So hopefully by researching this new work and making it, hopefully exhibiting it, that will help bring myself to some conclusion as to why I find those structures so fascinating in the landscape. I think they are beautiful to look at. I think they represent a connectedness in terms of the way that electricity is delivered from one place to the other, or in the case of energy sent along wires, how the energy in the blood is circulated around the body. Mm-hmm. There's also something eerie about it. I think a television mast with six red lights that you see at night, it's a thing of beauty. But it also is, a beacon of some kind, and similarly in Red Lights in a Solstice Moon, we look at the energy of these particular places, and again with Codename India, 1967, we're talking about how how energy is contained within the walls of a bunker. And how we interact with that as humans. So it's right across my work, and I hope that I can, through my own research, come to my own conclusions as to why I find pylons and electricity so exciting to work with. Some might say it's a dangerous obsession, but it's one that I'm quite glad to indulge in for now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, because you're in your work, but also in your written work, you're saying a lot about the beauty of fringes of a landscape, or things that, or places, or constructions that are not, or structures, that are maybe not generally seen as beautiful. That's a major draw that you're interested in. So maybe that kind of connects with these pylons and masts.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, there's nothing that excites me more than finding a man-made structure immersed in nature, because it doesn't belong there. There's always a story there, and it's the kind of thing that people would automatically reject as having any kind of aesthetic significance. But I often think the opposite, and often end up pointing a camera at it at some point.
Mm. Speaking of a camera, actually, now going into your the process of your work, so you've, I think your films, well, it expresses pretty well when you just start watching them, that they have something very do-it-yourself to them. So you're obviously your own cameraman, and you do your own voiceover in some of your films, and you even appear in your film in This Way for Fun, for example, where you're putting up a sign in the forest. How important is it for you doing it all yourself, and also maybe as a second question, and revealing sometimes the very process of your art making in your work?
I think the idea of doing things yourself is really important for me. So it goes back to, in my much younger days, I was involved with fanzines and embracing that kind of punk and DIY culture. Similarly with the music that I make with my band, we've never relied on a record label, we've never relied on studio time. You know, we've always been able to make our own opportunities. And similarly to the Moving Image Makers Collective as well, I mean, we're all really fortunate in that at any given time, one or two of us have always got work shown another festival, but we do like to generate our own opportunities and not rely on anyone else for opportunities to make work and share our work. So I'm at my happiest when I have a new project to research and think about and contemplate. And then in the case of the films made in the forest, spend time in the forest, just me and my very small camera, a little small audio recorder, and just going out to film when I can. And actually, one of the influences in that way of working, I can't remember which year it was at the Alchemy Film and Moving Image Festival, but the American filmmaker Leighton Pierce came and spoke at the symposium, and he spoke about, you know, when you find the urge to work, you must work, and it doesn't really matter that much what you do. And of course, a lot of the work that he makes, you know, these beautiful films are shot on, the balcony outside his house. So it's very domestic. So I think that's probably why I've spent so much time in the forest, which is, you know, 5 minutes walk from where I live, that if there's a window of opportunity and you feel the need to work, you can grab a camera, put on some boots and head out there and see what there is to see in that particular day. So yeah, a big believer in that DIY approach. But of course, that's not to say that I don't enjoy the opportunity to collaborate with people. And that's another strength of the Moving Image Makers Collective.
Yeah, you were mentioning kind of also the punk attitudes that I also see very strongly in your films, like especially also on the formal level. Because, for example, when we think about Red Cap, and about a folk tale and how folk tales are usually I'm told also in the moving image, like traditional narratives and how they're told, and you find in there a completely different way of talking about a tale that's omnipresent through basically non-representational abstraction, which I find is a very kind of, I would say it's a punk, very non-conformist approach to tradition.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that at all. And you're right. I mean, there are some beautiful retellings of folk tales and folklore, especially through some of that sort of early Soviet animation. So that's always interesting. I mean, I hadn't considered that in the past. But yeah, I suppose it's a counter to the traditional way of telling a story and finding something that interests you and looking at an alternative way of telling that tale. And I think that the same is similar in the film Sea Sisters. And again, that's quite an old film now, but exploring the ideas around sort of sea sirens, using a mixture of found footage and new footage So just a different way of telling that story, one that, you know, I found interesting and challenging, but you know, also satisfying and hopefully something that they, you know, then the audience would like to see and enjoy as well.
Yeah. It's also, I think, also in Celluloid, for example, where you have takes the inserts of William Burroughs's American Dream quote, you know, that where he says America is not so much a nightmare as a non-dream. Where we see in the image, we see a young woman dancing a jig in a boyen dress, you know, and then images of like some way of a family album of a trip to New York. And so it's a quite interesting way of also talking about one's identity, or also kind of the in-betweens of a promise and a rootedness.
Yeah, it was a really interesting film to make, and it's an avenue that I've possibly not finished exploring. I mean, that William Burroughs quote I found, and I was instantly fascinated by it, and you can interpret it any number of ways. And I think the images using celluloid is perhaps just one way. And it was really interesting to work with that archive footage. You know, I don't know who these people are, or the sources of the images, if it's home movies or otherwise, but you can't help but build up quite an intimate relationship with these individuals if you're working with the archive footage, and you know, transferring it into something and thinking about how you apply you know, that quote from William Burroughs, you know, physically onto the film, or you know, how that relates to it. And you know, there was snippets in there of the Highland dancing, which I used in the film From Scotland with Love, and you know, as a Scottish person, I was really interested in you know, how these kind of Scottish traditions, which in the grand scale of things, you know, Highland dancing is a relatively new Scottish tradition, but how it finds its way over to America and Canada, you know, how I identify it, how they identify it over there, if it's expats, and also about, you know, if I'm using that footage to tell another story, there was something really interesting about, you know, making that work and making it into a dance of defiance and protest, and then you're presenting that back to the world, both in Scotland and in America as well, to see what the reaction is there.
Yeah, you're touching upon an interesting point that I also put down when I watched your films. Is I was wondering, what's the importance of recycling your own footage or found footage that you have used before in other films, for other films? Like, because you use a lot of Super 8 millimeter, so you have a very strong Super 8 millimeter analog film practice that you mix with digital imagery. And then you can trace also a lot of kind of recycling and rearranging footage. Yeah,
that's a good question. I think you know, when I started to discover experimental film for myself, and you know, probably through the film festival as well, you know, discovered that repurposing archive film is a legitimate way to make new work. So I think early on I was excited about those possibilities, and again, being a you know, an emerging artist in my late 30s, I didn't have a, you know, I never had a back catalogue of footage to call upon. So the fact that for Sea Sisters I could, you know, download footage and repurpose it, I found that really interesting. And that there's also artists like Stephen Broomer, who exhibited work at Alchemy 2 years ago. He came over to Hoyk and presented work and talked at the symposium about how he worked with archive footage and re-photographs, and then does terrible things to the fabric of the film to make new works that are actually quite beautiful. So, I mean, that's fascinating for me as well. And I think there's something that's not yet fully realised in my own practice, and that it is that analogue film practice. And you know, I've dipped my toes into the water of Cafenol processing an 8mm film. I've got stock of expired Kodachrome 40 ready to use when the mood comes, plus the chemicals to develop it. And in the case of From Scotland, in the case of The Beauty and Sadness and the Pattern of Two Chemical Reactions, so the 8mm film there was actually film that was that I'd shot when I was basically a boy back in the days when you could shoot on Super 8 and send it away to a lab and then it would arrive back. And I was just interested in, you know, putting that together with other recently home developed Super 8 to see what would come of that experiment and see what would come aesthetically. And it's a fascinating way to work that I long to engage in further. At the minute, there's too much clicking of a mouse to make things, whereas I'm really looking forward to, you know, getting my hands dirty and with that Super 8 processing.
That brings me to the element of play in your films. Because we were saying just before, a part of the Burroughs quote is that the dream is a spontaneous happening. And I feel with your films, when you see them, then you often feel like they're a result of trying out things as you go and playing with objects, like picking off every leaf of a fern frond or burying that sign card on the leaves to decompose. So my question would be, how important is play and curiosity in your work?
Yeah, that's a good question. Quite often people say to me, your work is really eerie or it's dark or sinister. And I suppose they're right, but there is that fascination with picking up an object and seeing what it looks like. Or, you know, for me, some of the most exciting places to film are beyond signs that say keep out or danger this way. So, I mean, I do find it fascinating to you know, look at the wider landscape, but then focus right in on a leaf or a piece of lichen or a feather. And, you know, with the film, Film the Forest, from I think 2019 I made that. So that was a sort of stop motion piece. It was so much fun to walk up into the forest and collect a whole bag of pieces of lichen or ferns or twigs or leaves or whatever I could find. And then, you know, actually touch them and put them into position and, you know, photograph it and move it and photograph it and move it and photograph it. So I don't think my work is known as being lighthearted, but hopefully there is an element in there somewhere.
No, absolutely. like going back to the outdoors, I mean, in a different way, it's also what I find that wind often recurs as a motive in your attempts to capture it in cinematic ways. Like literally in the title, wind blows at 7 frames per second. And how can you film wind, something that is experienced?
How can you film wind? Yes, I've no idea. I mean, I know that I've spent hours in the forest looking for the right kind of wind and trying to record the right kind of wind as well, with really cheap equipment that's not really fit for purpose. That's you're going to have to come back to me in 6 months and ask me that question. I'll have a complete answer. That's one that's going to require some contemplation. But how do you film wind? There's that exposed landscape, and one of the joys of the forest is to feel the wind and the sun in your face and stand still to look to see how the ferns and trees around you, you know, sway with that wind. But you know, that's only one representation. How do you capture something invisible that's sometimes there and sometimes not? No, it's an excellent question, but give me 6 months and I'll come back to you on that one.
Oh, you obviously use a lot of you try it out with sound, at the sound level. You have with this kind of the choppiness of the image in the beginning, you know, that reflecting this synthesizer spooling effect like that we get from DVDs when we spool forwards. That's kind of in that film. I felt like it's a very interesting way of telling what you can't actually the viscerality of it in a way. which brings me also to sound, basically, in your films. Like, can you talk a little bit about how you pick sounds for your films, and also as a strategy to basically juxtapose often or in strange traditional notions of rural landscapes that kind of ties a little bit with what we talked about in the beginning?
Yeah, I think I always try and think quite deeply about sound. And I know as filmmakers, sometimes it's a sort of second most important thing. I have an ongoing and long-term obsession with the band Kraftwerk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way that they work, the way that they sound, and the way that they present themselves has really influenced everything that I've touched over the years. And of course, these days, you know, there are all kinds of vintage synthesizer emulators that you can get online and start to play with. And I'm fascinated with using these digital sounds to represent the way that things look and feel in the forest. Mm-hmm. I can lose hours at a time, just kind of twiddling dials and switches to see what sounds that could be made, and finding the exact wrong sound to put on a film about a forest and a landscape. So it's a fascinating thing. I'm lucky enough that at certain times of year, I do get to see a lot of experimental films, and I always, you know, listen deeply to see, you know, how sound is used. And I mean, I was thinking recently about Jan Švankmajer and the way he records sounds and repurposes sounds, and the way that the sounds add to the overall feeling of the work. It's a fascinating process, but I also like to kind of try and record the sound of the landscape in one way, and make sure that's incorporated into the film, even if it's in a very small and subtle way. But there's nothing more satisfying than four notes of a nice synthesizer that can be added into something. I'm also quite obsessed at the minute with vintage Mellotron emulators. So these Mellotrons in real life, you know, they're powered by lines of magnetic tape where the sounds are recorded on them. So they have a very particular sound, and I think there's something quite appealing about, you know, that kind of vintage mono feel that can counteract, you know, sort of really bright and vivid colors of a landscape, for example.
Yeah, I mean, also on the spoken word level, in a way, that would you use where you use I would say found sounds, or basically maybe found sound recordings. Like, for example, what struck me is that in many of your films there's a Russian voice going through. I mean, in two or three of them, but I mean, like, there's a theme in it. How what's your connection with the Russian language, or especially these recordings? Where do they
stumble upon them? That's another unhealthy obsession, possibly, and again, one that I haven't quite worked through my system yet. So in Red Lights on a Solstice Moon, and I think Codename India, the anyone listening can Google this for a more coherent answer, but number stations were ways of communicating through the Cold War. So kind of various superpowers would get in touch with their people on the ground in different countries by broadcasting codes over, shortwave or longwave radio bands. So there are people that are dedicated to collecting those sounds and making those sounds available. So you can go in and listen and download to these coded messages from all parts of the country. And again, you know, there are still number stations that exist and broadcast that no one will take responsibility for owning them. And of course, these days, no one has any idea what these coded messages mean. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fascinated with that. And I guess it, you know, sounds that are captured from the air, there is something eerie about it. So the Russian, don't ask me to translate it, but I think, you know, it sounded sinister. It sounded you know, otherworldly almost. And that kind of, that excited me. And it continues to excite me. And I'd recommend anyone to seek out some of these messages that you can find online from these number stations in particular. And sometimes it might be a list of numbers in Russian, but at one point in history, that list of numbers in Russian meant something to the person who was in the other end of that transmission.
Yeah, I find it fascinating
you can lose hours and hours, if not days, listening to it. It's fascinating.
Yeah, but also on this level, in a way, you show a lot of that you have a very fluid temporality in your work, and that's why I find it quite interesting too. That there's very many angles, kind of, and looking at your films, also with a historical lens. Which brings me actually to a question that I should ask very quickly because we have to wrap up. your film, The Forest, number 4, is for me in a way like a forest symphony of green to red tinting, double images resembling a 3D effect, and also digitally morphed image manipulations. So like in a way, do you think would you say it's an homage to your work so far?
Yes, actually, I think it probably is. So there's one more forest project that I'll be working on with our Moving Image Makers Collective in September this year. I'm going to build a periscope that'll allow you to see the soul of the forest. So I think with Film the Forest number 4 and the project in September, that'll probably draw a line for now underneath it. And that'll allow me to kind of, like we mentioned earlier, pursue that obsession with pylons and work out what that means to me. So very different environments. But yeah, that's a really interesting point. And thanks for that observation.
Well, I think this is all we have time for, as they say. Jason, do you have anything to add? Any last words or comments?
Well, just to say that I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to share the work. The Alchemy Film Festival has always been really special for me. I've been an audience member from the very start. I've spent years volunteering at the festival, and I've been lucky enough over the past few years to have work exhibited at the festival. So yeah, thank you very much for selecting the work. I love it, thank you.
Well, and thank you, Jason, for this really wonderful conversation. And I hope you all out there get the chance to watch this fantastic hour-long program of 17 films called Attention Red at Alchemy Film and Moving Image Festival. Enjoy.